Ewan, let's get started with the whip around of this weekend's scores. Match day 3 is complete. More fun to be had in La Liga Santander. We start on Friday. Sevilla and Celta Vigo played out a 1-1 draw. Looked like Sevilla were going to pull it out, Ewan. Mudo Vasquez had scored with less than 10 minutes to go. But then Denis Suarez, in Celta's only chance of the game, scoring the equalizer. I do want to say I like what Celta did this summer, just bringing back all their academy kids and playing them together. It may not make them like a substantially better team, but I like what they did from, at the very least, a chemistry standpoint.
Yeah, lots of good players brought into Celta. Maybe the problem is Fran Escriba as a coach. I'm not too sure about that one.
Yeah.
To be honest, he kept them up last year, but at the same time, I mean, Iago Aspas really kept them up. So we'll see how he fits all those parts together. They did make some good moves in the summer, but as you say, that game there, 16 shots it was for Sevilla, one shot in the whole game, on target or off, for Celta Vigo, and they managed to somehow get a 1-1 draw. Pretty lucky stuff.
Yeah, not so good for Sevilla, who had a chance to. They would have been level with Atletico atop the table if they just held on for a few more minutes there. Tough one for them. The Basque Derby finished 2-0 to Athletic. Athletic were all over La Real. This could have been worse than 2-0. La Real really weren't that good. Kind of see the effects of playing three straight games away from home to start the year. Iñaki Williams and our old friend Raul Garcia getting the goals at San Mamés. On Saturday at El Sadar, Osasuna and Barcelona drew 2-2. Osasuna's incredible home form continues, Ewan. 27 straight unbeaten dating back to last season as they hold the champs who are still without Leo Messi.
Yeah, impressive stuff for Osasuna. It's a poor result for Barcelona, of course, dropping 2 points, but I think a lot of teams will drop points there. I mean, Atletico had it pretty easy, I think, last time they went there when Osasuna were up. I think it was a 3-0 win, if I remember correctly. Quite a good performance on the road. This year is going to be tough. I mean, like you say, 27 undefeated, 21 of those were victories. Osasuna is going to be a tricky one when that comes around for Atletico and for Real Madrid too.
I think you and I, when we posted our predictions, we kind of were thinking the same thing. Osasuna are going to be safe, and I think
we're on the Osasuna bandwagon.
Yes,
we're
we
fully
are.
On it. You and me up front, next to the driver. We're on it.
Oh yeah, yes indeed. Getafe and Alaves finished 1-1 at the Coliseum. Getafe still winless on the year. The Alaves goal in this game was really talking about a pinball before Jose Lu finally finished it. Good for Alaves though; they're off to a decent start this year. When there probably weren't very high expectations for them, considering they lost their coach and several other key guys they had brought in on loan this summer. Levante 2-0 winners over Real Valladolid. Valladolid were pretty good in the first half, but Levante get two late goals to win that one. Real Betis finally get their first win. They beat Leganés 2-1, coming back through Nabil Fekir and Lauren Moron, who scored the goals there. On to Sunday at Mestalla, Valencia 2, Mallorca 0, 2 Dani Parejo penalties. Mallorca a bit unlucky. Rodrigo Moreno did start, played 60 minutes as his move to Atletico fell through. We'll talk about the ramifications of that a little later on. I'm worried about Espanyol, Ewan. Granada went there and pounded them 3-0. Not a very good start for them, and their summer business, not a big fan of it. They lost two key guys and didn't really replace them.
Yeah, losing their coach as well. So not great for Espanyol, but I think their objective for the start of the season was just, let's just get through these Europa League qualifiers. They've been to Iceland, Switzerland and Ukraine. I think their motivation was just get through these, get in the group stages and then focus on the Liga. They've done that. I think they'll be fine. They'll be mid-table. They usually are.
They always are.
Last season, I think their focus right now was on Europe. Now that they're in, they can turn to La Liga and maybe pick it up after the international break.
Yeah, it's a long season, and Espanyol are almost always, you generally know where they're going to be. So, I think they will be okay, but worrying times right now as we launch into September. We'll talk about Atletico in just a minute, of course, but the last game of Match Day 3 was at La Cerámica. It finished 2-2 between Villarreal and Real Madrid. Gareth Bale, the man who no one wanted, saving Madrid's blushes with a brace and then a red card. This was a really good game. Villarreal's defense, again, not so great.
Yeah, Real Madrid's defense not so great either.
Right.
This was an interesting game. I mean, I think this season, watch Villarreal. That should be the the motto of the season. They're going to be scoring lots of goals and conceding lots of goals. And to be honest, Real Madrid might be something similar.
Yeah, not the start Madridistas really wanted to start the season. Not the start that was expected after all the money spent over the summer. All right, let's circle back to the Wanda Metropolitano, Ewan, where Atletico beat Eibar 3-2 in, as you wrote on the site yesterday, the greatest comeback of the Simeone era. Wow. First time in 10 years, over 10 years, Atletico came back from a 2-0 deficit to win. And it's the first time since 2013 that Atleti won their first three games in La Liga. I can't remember, Ewan, did Atletico do something like big that season that maybe you went and wrote a book about? I'm struggling to remember.
I think it just kind of went under the radar for most of the season, and then on the last day went and won the league at Barcelona.
Yeah.
So, we've got a lot for them to live up to, but yeah, perfect start to the season. When you looked at it, three very winnable fixtures to start off with.
Yeah.
You would have expected them to win their first three games, but as we've seen in recent years, they haven't always been able to, even with some other winnable fixtures at the start of previous campaigns. So a good one for them to get off to, and then international break comes at a perfect time, regroup and go into the season proper with a head start over everybody else. Quite a significant one over Barcelona and Real Madrid.
5 points clear of Barca, which is a huge advantage. It's been a long time since Atleti have had that kind of advantage over Barca, which kind of tells you how dominant the Catalans have been. And this is a game I feel like Atleti would have kind of struggled to come back in the last few years. I feel like teams like Eibar in the last couple years have given Atleti a lot of trouble. Nearly won this fixture last season before Borja Garces came on at the very end and was the hero. I feel like this is a game that Atletico would have struggled with in the past, but this was a tremendous comeback. Wasn't really certain they had this in them. Justin Kramer on our Patreon page asks, why did Cholo instantly run up the tunnel at the end of the game? To which I say, because he's Cholo, because he's awesome, because that's what he does.
Yeah, he always does that.
Yeah.
He was crazy. I'm sure everyone's seen the footage of him, whipping the crowd up, getting them going. We saw quite a lot of that the season they did win the league out. I remember one image when it was the home game against Barcelona, the 0-0 draw, and he was going absolutely crazy.
Yes.
For him to be doing that in the home game against Eibar just shows you how important he knew this game was. It was the same at Leganés last week. He was going absolutely crazy, calling for the away section, which is to the left of the dugouts, calling for the away section at Leganés for the fans to up their voice. And the away game, he really thought that the fans and their support could make a difference in this away game. He's up for this season. He's ready to go. And Atletico Madrid seem to be following his lead.
Yeah, and these have all been big games to start the season. I mean, the names of the opponents don't leap out at you. They're not the biggest teams in Spain, but they're tough opponents to play. Getafe, Leganés, and then, of course, this
literally tough opponents to play. Probably three of the most physical teams in La Liga. So for some of the new guys who maybe haven't played in this league before, maybe haven't played against these opposition, for some of them to come in and get used to these really tough games. João Félix, for example, for him to be going up against Getafe, where they're just going to be kicking everything out of him for the 90 minutes. For him to do that in the first game until he did go off, that was a baptism of fire. And then next up, you get to go to Leganés. It's quite similar. They're very tough as well. And Eibar as well, they can really put themselves about. So three really tough, draining fixtures. And I think Atletico really do need this international break to regroup, recharge, and then go back at it.
Absolutely, and Eibar are one of the best pressing teams in La Liga. They are very tough to get through. They play a very high line, they're very aggressive, and they went up 2-0 inside 20 minutes. So how did Atletico do this, Ewan?
Well, I'd ask, how did Atletico go 2-0 behind? Because to be honest, I still don't really understand how Eibar managed to go 2-0 up. But I mean, I understand it actually. One cross that just found the right man, and it was a good header, and then one deflected shot that found the back of the net. So I think Eibar were quite lucky to be 2-0 up when they were. Atletico hadn't really done much wrong to start. Atletico started fine. They were seemingly in control, no worries. And then Eibar managed to put themselves 2-0 up in quick succession. But Atletico kind of showed, I think, over the rest of the game that, no, they were by far the better team on the day. And they were able to make up for that sort of freak 2-0 deficit they got themselves into early on.
Yeah, I felt like the João Félix goal to kind of get Atletico back in the game, that definitely turned the tide. Atletico were far and away the better team in the second half. I don't think Eibar had another shot on target the entire game after the Arbia goal.
Yeah, I mean, Eibar did almost nothing in attack. They couldn't keep the ball. I mean, even when they did break down an Atletico attack, they almost couldn't even get to halfway. They were out of ideas in attack, couldn't really do anything. The guys in the wing couldn't beat their man just to get 10 yards, 15 yards, 20 yards up the pitch. They just couldn't do it. So it meant that Atletico won the ball back really at the halfway line almost every time and could just launch another attack. So I don't think it's that they tried to play defensively once they went up. I think it's just that Atletico were just relentless. And you saw it the way that Simeone just threw men forward, got the fullbacks high up, put on Thomas as well late on, just flooding the attack to try and get men forward and get those goals.
Yeah, there was some surprise, understandably so, that Simeone put on Thomas for João Félix, but Cholo kind of knows what he's doing. He's done this kind of thing before, and Thomas or someone else has popped up with the really important late play or the important late winner. Boom, Thomas gets it right on the stroke of 90 minutes, and a goal that on replay was actually really nicely done. Kind of the 1-2 between Thomas and Saul, Thomas just kind of bulldozes his way through, takes a couple deflections, and bang, it's in the net behind Dimitrovic. And just the
place. I loved a quote from Cholo in the press conference afterwards. He said, you know, sometimes a substitution that might seem defensive at first is actually an attacking one. And that's the thing, you know, you can look at football as if it's like a FIFA game or a Wikipedia page. Oh, Thomas, he's listed as a defensive midfielder. Yeah, but watch the game. Where is Simeone using them? How is he using them? It can be different. We've seen it before. Every team, I think, has their guy they throw up into attack who's not an attacker. We see it with Real Madrid and Barcelona as well. When they're struggling, need a goal, Ramos goes as centre-forward, Piqué goes as centre-forward. Atletico have Thomas, who can play up there in that role. He's done it for Ghana. He does it sometimes for Atletico. He can be there to help out the attack when your other guys are tired, coming off, or when you have injuries and you don't have Morata, for example, available. Thomas is there. He can do that job. Just because he's a defensive midfielder doesn't necessarily mean Simeone was going to try and hold on to a 2-2 draw. Certainly not.
Yeah, and this is why Thomas is really underrated and really, really valuable to this team and should probably see his contract renewed at some point this season. That would be nice. Really, really versatile player. He can break up play. He can pass between lines. He can score goals from distance. He can win games like this. He's a really, really good, pretty much complete midfielder. Maybe not the Atletico's best. He may be their third best out of five midfielders, but he's still very, very good. And he is available for very cheap.
And he started the season so well. I mean, he, remember, was at the Africa Cup of Nations, and the idea was, I think, that Marcus Llorente would start the season in the middle alongside Saul, but by all accounts, the reports from Atletico are that when Thomas came back, he was just so determined, so up for it, so on the top of his game, that they had to start him the first few weeks of the season ahead of Llorente, and he kept Llorente outside for quite a bit. Llorente did start this game, but Thomas comes on and proves himself, and it's going to be really hard for Llorente to take that spot away from Thomas. I think eventually he will, but I think at this point Simeone knows what Thomas can do. He's loyal to his players when he can be, so I think at this point it's Thomas's spot to lose and Llorente's to win.
All three of Atletico's subs were very good. We talked about Thomas, of course. Roro Riquelme got his debut. What did you make of him?
He put himself about. Some of his decision making, some of his touches weren't great, but you've got to expect that from a guy who's so young, only 19 years of age. I think Simeone was looking for some of that sort of Ansu Fati magic. Get the youngster on, see if he can do something. And, you know, he showed, you know, so much motivation, eagerness, was getting himself into good positions. He's, you know, another one who's had a great preseason, who's been impressing all the coaches during the training. So he's one to watch. But in this particular game, maybe he could have done more in certain situations. But Simeone, you know, he wanted to get the wild card out, put him in there, see what can happen. If that doesn't work, he's got the more reliable, the more experienced Thomas to come on. And he put on both of them in the end, and one of them came up with the goods.
Yeah, man, I think Riquelme's energy was nice to see. Definitely a wild card quality against a defense that had been kind of tiring for a while. I thought it was not necessarily bold, but it was a very wasn't quite the Cholo move that we expect. In the past, he's had some reservations about throwing academy kids and the B team players out there. Borja Garces last season in this very fixture was kind of an aberration, but that was nice to see Riquelme get about 15 minutes of time. Of course, the ranks from which Cholo can choose from were thinned out a little bit on deadline day when Mollejo and Javi Montero were loaned out to Depor in a couple of really interesting moves, which we'll get to. But of course, the final sub from this match was the first one, and that would be Vitolo coming on for Marco Llorente, and Vitolo did it again, scoring the equalizer with a really nice stabbed right-footed finish that rolled beyond Dimitrovic. And just every time Vitolo was on the ball, it felt like there was danger looming, you know? I mean, this is a guy that has been hurt the better part of 2 years since he joined, and he's really coming up with the goods now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's up for it. He's stuck around. He's a bit like Atletico Madrid's Gareth Bale, in some senses, you know. He's a player that many expected to leave the club this summer, a player who's often injured, so you haven't seen that much of him in the last year, and a player who, when he is fit, when he is available, when he is motivated, he can actually be really effective for you. And that's the way it's been at the start of the season. Obviously, a few injuries have opened up spaces for him to come in, get opportunities. He's taken them. He's scored against Leganés. He's scored here. He's doing everything that you could expect of him.
Tres Gatos, a Colts Nero chat amigo, asks, at what point does Vitolo force his way into the starting lineup? And with Thomas Lalar playing well last match, do you see a point where Lemar and Vitolo start with Koke and Saul in the middle?
I don't think Vitolo does get in the starting lineup, really. He will for some games, of course. But I think Simeone views him more as an impact sub, the same way as Angel Correa has been for so long. When Angel Correa starts and gets 90 minutes, you know he's probably not going to score. When he comes on in the 60-minute mark and has half an hour, you know he's probably going to score. There are some players that just have that impact off the bench when other players are tired. Vitolo, I think, can be one of those guys. Angel Correa can be one of those guys, and I think they'll be the ones on the bench who Simeone turns to when he needs a goal, needs something different in attack. I don't think they'll be the starters. I think you'll see João Félix, Thomas Lemar, Costa, Morata, all these guys ahead of them in the pecking order in attack, but you know they can come on off the bench and do a job.
Yeah, I see it both ways with this Vitolo argument between should he start, should he come off the bench. I think Lemar is better to start games, but Vitolo has been in the better form, and he can be valuable, arguably more valuable, like you said, coming off the bench, kind of going at tired defenses. Did that against Leganés, did that against Eibar on Sunday. Yeah, I mean, Lemar, he's been all right to start the season. Lemar he's kind of a complex case because the end product hasn't really been there for him in his year plus, but he has some of the best passing abilities on the team. And he works hard. Cholo likes him. He's won him over. So Lemar's kind of a tough one, but I think he's going to continue to start, and you just hope he continues to progress and continues to adapt.
Yeah, exactly. He finished last season well. He started this one pretty well as well. So I think at this point, Lemar is in the starting 11 until performances say otherwise.
Yeah, and he's been okay. Just the issue has kind of been the end product, and the decision making has sometimes been a little spotty. But he's a very talented player, and like I said, he has some of the best passing abilities of anyone in the team, and you don't just want to lose that. So he should continue to start, and I think he will be okay. This will be a better year for him. Elsewhere, this was Koke's 418th game. He has now passed Gabby in the all-time ledger for Atletico. That is incredible. Just 27 years old still, freshly minted captain, and it's gone well for him this season, Ewan. Have you seen kind of a change in Koke in terms of his leadership style or playing style? Anything new from him as he has yet again made history in appearances?
Not really, in a way, because he always had that leadership. I mean, before you had other players were captain, you know, Gabby was captain, Godin was captain, but Koke's always been that sort of leader in midfield, the guy in the middle who shows his leadership with his play. He's not necessarily one of the shouty kind of captains, but you're going to get Koke leading by example, and you've had that for several years already. So the fact he now has an armband around his arm doesn't maybe change that, actually. But of course, he's going to be more of a leader in terms of his speeches, his talking to players, his organising of other players on the pitch. But even some of that he was doing anyway, so I don't think I have seen too big a change from him, because Koke was a leader anyway. He was born to be an Atletico captain.
Anders Sorensen on a Patreon page asks, should the team that started the second half against Eibar start the next match? And what is your view on João Félix? He does have some nice moments, but I worry he can't seem to get himself involved in the game.
Well, I think we already sort of talked about the substitutions and whether these guys have a place in the starting lineup.
Right. But
we've kind of gone over Vitolo's case. About João Félix, I mean, I've been impressed by his start. I mean, everyone remembers that run against the Taffy, but ignoring that, looking at everything else that he's been doing, he's been really good. I was at the Leganés game last week and really just kind of watched his movement, watched the way he got involved, and he was impressive. All the other players, Koke was one of them, of course. This is an example of him and directing others. All of them were always kind of telling them exactly where to be. Morata was really good in that sense. Morata was always instructing them, telling them how to press, telling them where to be, telling them how to play off Morata. And João Félix was learning. He was listening to Morata, trying things out, and got the assist in the end. He's got his first goal now against Eibar. I don't really think we could have expected much more from him. He's obviously been able to fit in straight away. We saw that in pre-season. Now the first competitive games have come along, and he's certainly not frozen or anything like that. He's just kept up what we expected of him, and you know, as long as expectations are managed, he's 19, he's not going to be Antoine Griezmann yet. As long as expectations are managed, I think he'll have a great season.
Yeah, he's a different player from Griezmann. He's taking up positions in the box that Griezmann could not often take up, because Griezmann had to play two or three different positions at once. So João Félix has been kind of liberated in a sense, in a manner that Griezmann never really could be, especially the last couple of years of his time in Madrid. A goal and an assist from three games isn't too shabby for a kid adjusting to a new league, a tougher league. He's getting fouled every 5 minutes, basically. Teams have been really physical with him, unsurprisingly. Only 26 touches on Sunday, but did get the goal, and that's what you hope for, that kind of clinical, kind of lethal impact like that. He got the goal that kicked off the rally. I think you and I talked about this actually over the summer when the deal was nearing completion, that expectations kind of had to be tempered a little bit. Yeah, he had an amazing preseason. He's clearly an outstanding talent, but he's just a kid, and it's a very long season for a 19-year-old coming over fresh from Portugal. It's a long year, and we'll see how much he can keep it up.
Exactly. I mean, I know a lot of people are angry with Griezmann and the way he left and all of that. I think that's led some people to play down how good a player Griezmann is. There's a lot of spite there at Griezmann as a person. And I've heard a lot of people talking about how João Félix can be better than Griezmann, is already doing certain things better than Griezmann. Let's remember, Griezmann just came third in the Ballon d'Or. Griezmann's one of the very, very best players in the world. João Félix is 19, could get there maybe, but let's not pretend it's an upgrade from Griezmann. It could be in the long term. Right now, we have to remember he's 19 and can only offer so much. And yeah, as long as the expectations are managed, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, and right now things are just getting started with all the business Atletico did this summer, bringing in 8 new players. It was very nearly 9, but Atleti ended up with 8 new players for around 245 million euros. Only 2 teams spent more, and you can probably guess who they are, Real Madrid and Barcelona. This is a revolution that is going on here, and I didn't expect Atletico to start 3-0. These are tough teams they've played, like you and I have talked about, like I've been talking about on the pod for a couple weeks. These are tough physical teams that Atleti have had to start the year against, and Atleti won all 3 games. These are games that they dropped points at Leganés the last 3 years. They have dropped points against Eibar the last couple years. So to win all these games is huge, and Atletico are the only team with a perfect record through 3 weeks, and they're not getting lucky. I mean, they've won each game by just 1 goal, as Danny Carvajal was so kind to point out after Real Madrid's game. But by expected goals, Atletico are second in La Liga in goals scored. Expected goals against, they're third in expected goals allowed, and by expected points, they're 0.5 of a point behind Sevilla for top spot. So this is legitimate what they've done so far. They're playing well.
Yeah, they thoroughly deserve to win every one of the games, only by 1 goal in certain ones, but there were circumstances for that. The Leganés one, it didn't come, the goal didn't come early, but they were knocking on the door throughout. The Getafe game, Renan Lodi's red card sort of, forced him into a more defensive second half compared to the first half. And then against Ibor, we already talked about it. It was kind of three freak goals against, two freak goals for Ibor, and Atletico were able to come up with three goals in the performance where they really dominated. Remember, Diego Costa as well with two goals that were ruled out for offside. So Atletico, I think, fairly in control against Ibor, deserved to win. And yeah, we'll see how they do when they come back from the break at Real Sociedad. A tricky game, but if they keep playing like they have been, maybe they can actually go and win at Anoeta this year.
Yeah, tricky game. I'm going to keep calling it Anoeta. I know they changed the name. I'm not going to stop calling it that. That's a very tricky game to come back from. And then Juventus midweek. So that's a nasty little back-to-back to come back from international break from. You mentioned Renan Lodi. I thought he was great on Sunday, particularly in the second half. Just massive. He looks like quite the find. Quite the talent, and that's a great bounce back from his first game, in which he, of course, picked up two yellow cards in 30 seconds, Ewan.
Yeah, the first game, we hardly got a chance to see if he was good or not, or how how he is as a player, because he was sent off so quickly. This game, we got to see him, and yeah, he really impressed, getting really, really high up the pitch. I mean, him and Trippier basically don't play in their own half. They play in the halfway line or ahead. So Lodi, Trippier, two new fullbacks. It was always going to be difficult to replace Juan Fran and Felipe Luis, but these two guys have come in, had a good start, are showing what they can contribute to the attack, and they both have the energy and the pace to get back and defend when they have to. So good start from Trippier, as we've, I think, spoken about in depth. It's been well covered over the first couple of weeks. In this one, Renan Lodi really showed that he's at a great level as well.
How much Brazilian football are you going to watch this year now that Juan Fran's at Sao Paulo?
Oh, well, we'll have to cut this chat short very soon, because I'm going to have to go and tune into the latest game for Sao Paulo. You know, I've got to keep up, you know, with all the Sao Paulo podcasts and blogs and vlogs and all that kind of thing. It's a difficult thing.
I would expect nothing less. Another Colchonero Chat Amigo question from Zach Drisco. Who has been your surprise of the season after three games? For me, it has been Virgil van Savage, a tower in defense. Yeah, who would your surprise so far be, Ewan?
Yeah, Savage is a good shot. I wrote about him for Into the Calderon a couple of weeks ago, about just the fact that it's his position to lose, a little bit like with Thomas Partey. Right now at centre-back, we've got Hermoso and Felipe have come in, but Savage played so, so well against Getafe that it's his position to lose. He's then suffered a bit of an injury, which is a problem. We'll see how he is after the international break and who starts in that next game, but yeah, Savage has been really impressive, has sort of taken a step up, and it's been really interesting to see him and Jimenez play together, because they played so infrequently together, because they were always the ones competing for that spot alongside Diego Godin.
Right.
Now they're together, and they're showing that they can be quite a good partnership. So yeah, he's definitely a surprise. And then going back to another guy we've talked about already, Vitolo, I think has to be a surprise as well. I didn't really see that coming, that he would be so impactful so early. You knew he was going to be a fringe player. You knew he might get some more minutes over the start of the season. Well, Angel Correa was, well, suspended, on the way out, ill. He's been everything but near the lineup. So Vitolo was always going to get some minutes. He's had them. He's made the most of them. I've been impressed.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough question, because those are both good shouts. I think I'm going to go with Trippier, because he had a really rough year at Tottenham last year, and he's come in and he looks like he's been liberated. He has been just on the money through three games. He's been, I think, exactly the right back. No offense to Juan Fran, but he's been kind of the right back that Cholo has wanted in this team. He's done a really good job to kind of curb his weaknesses defensively. Trippier has been, he played wing back against Leganés, and he looked right at home. He's had a really, really good three games, and Santi Arias, who we were kind of calling for to start at times last year, it looks like Arias has more competition that he's gonna struggle to get beyond. Trippier, I think, would be my choice, but Vitolo has been outstanding. Savage has been outstanding. Only missed out on Sunday because of a foot problem he got at the last minute that put Hermoso into the starting 11.
Yeah, exactly. All good shouts. Lots of positive surprises, and yeah, just a positive start to the season.
All right, let's talk about transfers, Ewan. Particularly
let's
that Correa situation. Wild one. The timeline of that, I tried to sketch it out. Let's see if I've got it right. Atletico first demanded a little bit too much, around $55 million for Correa. But Milan negotiated, and it seemed like they had agreed a deal by the middle of August. And that deal would have, of course, allowed Atletico to bring in Rodrigo Moreno. It was done. Radio stations in Madrid and Valencia and the papers were reporting it, that it was going to get done in the next few days. They wanted to register Rodrigo for the Getafe game to open the season. This looked like it was done. But something happened. It could have been Milan backing out of the deal because Atletico pulled the offer for Rodrigo off the table and returned to negotiations with Milan. Atleti lowered their demands to between 40 and 45 million. Milan still couldn't really afford that. They made an offer of a two-year loan with a 10 million euro loan fee and a 25 million euro option to buy, and Atletico rejected that out of hand. Milan then came back reportedly with another offer of 35 million for 80% of Correa's rights. That too was rejected, and that was the last offer. Milan eventually moved on to Ante Rebic of Eintracht Frankfurt. They signed him on a two-year loan with an option to buy for around 30 million euros, basically the same parameters they were offering for Correa. Milan obviously have some financial difficulties. They had to agree to not play in Europe this season because of those financial difficulties. Haven't had a positive net spend in 5 years. So it's a tough team to do a deal with, especially at the terms Atletico were asking for earlier in the summer. And, you know, it seemed like this was going to get done, that Correa was going to get his move. He had agreed to join Milan. He had agreed a contract with them. But that too, has been taken off the table. He stays. Rodrigo stays. And Atleti's squad until January is closed. What do you make of this whole situation? Who's to blame, if anyone? And what's going to happen to Correa now? How much playing time do you think he sees after all this change?
I think at the heart of the matter, it's quite simple. It's Atletico set a price and AC Milan simply couldn't afford it. They just didn't have the money. They tried to come up. You often see in the transfer market, a club will set a price, but really they really want to move on that player, and they'll be willing to negotiate that price down a little bit, and you find a point where you can sell. Atletico Madrid, I think, had the stance of, we will sell you Correa for this much money. If you do not give us exactly that much that we're asking for, he's going to stay, because we know what he can do. He loves the club, he's effective, Simeone likes him. We have no need to sell Correa. There was no need to sell Correa, but there was a willingness to sell him if the right price was paid. The right price wasn't paid, so he stays. I think that's at the heart of the matter, the way it all worked. The Rodrigo element comes into it, because if Correa had moved on, they'd have moved to bring Rodrigo in from Valencia. But because Correa wasn't going to go, Rodrigo didn't come. And I think at the end of the day, Atletico are fairly content with it all. They were up for moving on Correa if it was possible. But if they had to keep him, they were always willing to do so, and that's what's happened. So I don't think it changes anything. He's not played yet, obviously, this season. Part of that was because of a suspension carried over from last season. Part of it was because of all the transfer rumours, and then part of it was that he was out last week with fever. I think after the international break, Simeone will work with him, get his head in the right place, and I think he'll feature probably just about as much as he did last year, maybe even more, because of the departure of Griezmann. I don't think, for example, João Félix will play quite as many minutes as Griezmann did, because Griezmann is kind of indestructible. He plays almost every minute. So I think there'll be minutes going. We've already said that Vitolo deserves some of them. I think Angel Correa will get some of them as well, and he'll contribute his part from the bench, as he has done fairly well for the past few years.
Yeah, nearly 200 appearances at this point for Correa. I remember his debut against Las Palmas, the glint in his eye at 20 years old, and now he's got nearly 200 appearances. Yeah, it's definitely an intriguing one. I felt like the Rodrigo deal would have been great for Atletico, not only because he's a key player at Valencia, but because his player profile, I think, was kind of needed, especially considering Diego Costa gets hurt all the time. He would have been nice to have to compete for minutes, but it was always going to be a tough deal to make, especially after the season began. And for that price, Atletico could not afford that price without selling Correa. And they are apparently fine with keeping Correa. Simeone knows him. Simeone loves him. I think he may see more time competing as a striker, competing with João Félix to partner Correa to partner Costa, Morata, if not both. And that's an important point to remember, is that João Félix isn't going to play Griezmann's minutes in his first season. This is an investment who Atletico really need to protect. And that is where Correa could come in, feasibly. Could also play on the wing, as we've seen. He will get minutes in the Copa del Rey. There may not be many times when he plays 90 minutes, but the Copa del Rey early rounds, he probably will. And yeah, Correa is kind of a known quantity. I'm not sure how much better he can get. He's not a bad player, but not sure what the ceiling is, or if Atletico even need him to reach a certain ceiling.
Exactly. He is what he is, and he is what he has been for the past few years. So Atletico will stay with a player who they completely know, no question marks about him. And I think that's a good thing.
If they had sold Correa, they would have brought in over 300 million euros this summer in player sales. As it stood, Atletico ended up bringing in around 280 million in sales. Griezmann, Lucas, and Rodri, obviously the big departures. Obviously a fee of a portion of Griezmann's transfer fee went to Real Sociedad. A portion of Rodri's transfer fee went to his old club, Villarreal. But Atletico got the full release clause for Lucas. They got quite a bit of money for Gelson, made quite the profit on him, also sold a few other fringe guys, including Nikola Kalinic, who went on an initial loan to Roma. We talked about Kalinic quite a bit last year and into this summer about, did he really get a chance? Did he not get a chance? Was he ever good enough to compete for a position as a starter at a club like this? I guess we'll never really know, but he was professional through all of this, I thought. Trained diligently, even when he wasn't called up, so wish him well back in Italy, where he has played well in the past.
Yeah, he probably didn't really get a chance, but I think once the opportunity to sign Alvaro Morata came up during the winter, that was one where Atleti just had to pull the trigger on it, get a striker of that quality in. And that was really the final nail in the coffin for Kalinic. And, you know, he hadn't really had the chance to prove himself yet, but Morata was just too good a player to turn down. And once he came in, well, someone had to move on. And he seems like he's found a good home in Rome. I think he'll be okay there. He'll get a chance there to see what he can do in the league he's familiar with.
Yeah, and the opportunity to get Morata, as you said, was at that moment.
It wasn't a slight on Kalinic. It wasn't right. Anything to do with we need to replace Kalinic. It was just a better player was available. The market presented an opportunity, and it just had to be done.
Yeah, the deal was there. It was an initial loan. Atletico were going to have to pay for Morata next summer, but you worry about that next summer. Atletico have done business in January before, including Morata, Costa, and Vitolo. Were registered in January. Matthias Kroneviter, God, there's a name I haven't thought of in a while. Matthias Kroneviter came in January. Kani came in a few years back in a really strange kind of transfer. But Atletico have shown a willingness to do business in January. I know the window has just ended, but I feel like this team is missing another striker, and I feel like they're missing a backup left back. And I could see them dipping back into the market in January. Probably not for Rodrigo, because I'm not sure he'd want to move now after things kind of fell apart between him and Atletico. But you never know. Valencia are, if nothing else, a wild card. They are, if nothing else, unpredictable. And Atletico did have the agreement with Peter Lim, so you never know if Atleti could go back in for him. But we'll see how this squad gets on. Maybe Ivan Šepanić is a surprise as that fourth striker. We'll see how the squad gets on. I do think they are going to need one, maybe two other depth pieces to really, truly make a big run at La Liga and maybe another competition out of the four they're in.
Yeah, that might be the case. And maybe it's just a case of seeing how the start of the season goes to see if they are in with a chance of really going for La Liga. Do they strengthen in January? See maybe how Mario Hermoso does at left back. If he has a few games there when Renan Lodi is out, if he proves to be a good backup option there, maybe they don't have to. If he struggles, then maybe they do have to go into the market. So maybe it's just a case of they've got a squad, it's a good squad, it could last the whole season if it had to, but they can put it into practice now, see how it does, and any glaring issues, they can be solved in January.
Who else stood out to you among La Liga teams in the window. We mentioned Celta at kind of the top of the show. Sevilla obviously made a dozen signings. They made a lot of moves in their first summer back under Monchi. He's just making up for lost time. Who else really stood out to you, though?
Yeah, I think Betis did a good job. They had a similar situation, I think, to Atletico Madrid in the sense that they lost a lot of good players. You know, Lo Celso went, Junior Firpo went, and they did a good job of going out and bringing in good replacements for each of those positions. It's hard to know if they have a better squad or weaker squad than they had last year, but by going out and getting decent pieces, like, you know, Nabil Fekir is one, Borja Iglesias was an interesting signing too, Alfonso Pedraza at left back, by going out and getting good signings to replace all the ones that have gone, I think they've been able to stay steady and have a good squad again. So that's a good piece of business, a busy summer there. A very busy summer in Sevilla, obviously 13 signings in total. I don't know how that's going to work out. That will take some more time. And then the other team, I guess, that's made headlines in the transfer market has been Atletico's next opponents, Real Sociedad. But I do have concerns about their defence. I mean, they've signed lots of attacking talent. That's great, but you have to keep the ball at the back of the net, and they've really struggled to do that so far.
Yeah, they just lost Diarra Mendy too, which doesn't help them because he kind of keeps everything together in their midfield. Yeah, that's not great, but they do have a lot of attacking talent with Odegaard, Isak, Porto. Those are, and William Chose as well. Those are, that's nice. That's a nice quartet. Oyarzabal as well is their leader. So you have those five players.
Januzaj as well has been playing well. So yeah, they have so many attacking options. I mean, that's great, but you need to keep the ball at the back of the net, and that centre back, they're a little bit iffy, and they also just have one of the most injury prone squads in the league. Last season they had more injuries than anybody else. They've already had quite a few. I worry a little bit about Real Sociedad. I'm not on board that hype train as much as everybody else. They have some great attacking pieces, sure, but you have to keep the ball at the back of the net, and maybe Atletico can exploit that in the next match.
We shall see. That is after the international break, as we are getting into it now. That match is 10 days away. It's going to be a long 10 days, but we will persevere, Ewan. We will survive, and we will be right back here to talk about it. Ewan McTeer, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of Colts Nero Chat.
No problem at all. My pleasure.
You can find Ewan at many places on the internet that discuss Spanish football, including La Liga Lowdown. They do wonderful work there. He freelances for Into the Calderon, managing Madrid, These Football Times. Really, Ewan is everywhere. He's written two books. Great to have you on the show as ever. Follow Ewan McTeer at eMcTeer. You can follow me on Twitter at JBBaron. Follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. You can also like ITC on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. Subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of this program on your favorite podcasting platform. And for Colts Nero Chat amigos, a couple new bonus podcasts coming your way through the course of this season. From as little as $3 a month, you can get access to this bonus pods and more, including a chance to appear on a future podcast with Rob Walker and yours truly. Patreon.com/Colts Nero Chat. We will be back next week. Until then, adios.